This is a production of Cornell University.
BPSA meeting, February 7th, 2011.
GPSA discussion meeting, February 7th, 2011.
Okay, if everyone can get seated, we're going to start the discussion meeting. Welcome to the first discussion meeting of the GPSA of the spring 2011 semester. I'm Jennifer Schwartz, the Executive Vice President of the GPSA. And this is Creston. He is the president of the GPSA, and to his left is Tom Balserski, the vice president of operations. So let's go around the room, and everyone can.
You should pitch the executive. Say that to the president.
Okay. So right now we're going to have updates from the executive committee, starting with the president.
So if you notice, we're switching around the agenda slightly, and that's just because of President Scorton and Susan Murphy's tardiness at the moment. So we wanted to save the introductions. Can you not hear me either? Is this on? All right, I'll just yell out. President Scorton's entering. So we might actually switch back to the introductions here. And so, as I said before, my name is Creston. I'm the president of the GPSA. Tom, go ahead.
Hello, I'm Tom Balserski, vice president for operations.
Bobby.
I'm Bobby Hartshorn, chair of the finance commission.
Kyle Albert, I'm the appropriations chair of the GPSA.
Chris Farmer, the finance board rep.
Go back here.
I'm Brenda Wicks. I'm assistant dean in the graduate school, observer.
Lindsay Spears, I'm the representative of the
class. Alex, the national representative for our
community. Community
control, the department of government.
Alex, I'm going to find out about the Right, and that's who's present. And we have two guests today, the president of Cornell University, David Scorton, and the vice president of student academic services, Vice President Susan Murphy. And they are gracious enough to come today to address the GPSA as a body and solicit and provide feedback to any questions you may have. And also, they probably have a list of questions of their own. So, and also, you can air any grievances at this time. So with that, that's it.
Thanks very much, and thank you for having us at the meeting. I don't have major questions to ask the GPSA unless you run out of questions to ask me. And I think Dr. Murphy will take the same approach. He yields to your questions first.
Sure.
Okay. We haven't rehearsed this, so that's good. So just a very short thank you for the service that you do for the university and especially for the graduate professional students. Very important. And just this afternoon, we had a student leaders meeting, which we have periodically.
It's really hard to hear back here, and I don't think I'm
yeah, like,
but maybe if you want to.
Yes, please do. So if you want to move into these areas. The only rule in the Memorial Hall is you cannot block the fire exit, so you have to leave a path right there. So if you want to move up towards the table, please do.
Come chairs forward. Up here.
Everyone just
sit in
the chair.
Side off.
So while people are shifting around, I think there's other questions, but I got nothing. All right. Sorry about the interruption.
We're open for questions.
Hey, open now it's on.
Okay, I might bring one thing. Just one process suggestion that I made a couple of days ago when Dr. Murphy and I visited the student assembly. We received input in the form of resolutions from different assemblies, the university assembly and the different assemblies. And we also meet with the different assemblies with the Cognizant University Administrator, so Dr. Murphy, if it's a student-oriented activity, Vice President Hopperman, if it's staff-oriented, and Provost Fox, if it's faculty. But I wanted to, at each assembly that I visit early this semester, offer to receive other kinds of communications from the assemblies, if possible, early in the term, in which you share with me, if you're comfortable, and in this case, Dr. Murphy, things you're thinking about, issues that you think may come up, concerns, even if they've not reached the point of being formulated into a specific resolution or a specific request for action. And it would serve two purposes from my perspective. One is that I would have more time to get educated and grounded in the issues that you're thinking about. And it would give us, secondly, just another chance to interact with each other, other than the infrequent times that I'm able to actually come to the GPSA or meet with the student leaders. It's entirely your call, not an order or anything like that, just a request and an offer to be responsive to communications, less formal than a resolution. So just a thought, and I'm sharing that with each assembly.
And I might just make comments on two things. One, I'm delighted to see that you have on your agenda today a resolution related to mental health. We really value the ongoing work with your ad hoc mental health group and look forward to receiving whatever version of the final resolution may be if it means you choose to pass on that resolution. And hope that we continue to have active grad and professional student participation in the Council on Mental Health and Welfare, a partnership with the ad hoc group. I do want to just remind you, and probably should have done this with the undergraduates who have come to the last people we met, we are continuing our conversation with the city about means restrictions, that's kind of the last piece of a whole mental health framework. You do have a graduate student on that committee, Alison Nash, who all the courses are very engaged, and thank you all for your participation. We are expecting this month to try to have some communication with the campus writ large on things leading up to these restrictions on the broader mental health framework, because in March it will be the time frame when the proposals from the consultants in Boston will be available for public commentary. and we will be reaching out to both the city community and the student, faculty, and staff community here for input in the month of March. So please just keep that sort of in your radar. The other thing that I think we will begin conversations, and I'll be working with Preston and Brenda to get some connections. We all know we need to move forward on doing something with Maplewood, as in replacing Maplewood. We are not in a position where we as a university will be able to finance that because of the debt position of the university. So we're going to have to think about a new way of developing a partnership with a private developer, where we will continue to own the land, but we will work with them to develop the property. We're just beginning to learn from our peers who have done that kind of work. That's not been a model that Cornell has exercised before. So actually the group with whom we'll be working visiting Syracuse today to get some framework. But this semester I expect us to try to start that conversation. Maplewood will come to its useful life end, if it hasn't already, by 2014, 2015, and that's not that far away. So I will be working through Brenda to get some connections out with the partner with grad professional students as we address that issue. So those are the two that I would put out there. And we'd love to get comments or questions from any of you.
That's a question. The question's for the president about the state of Cornell in the nation and the world. And I just would be curious, in your role as our public officer and representative, how is Cornell positioned today? And since we are graduate students, do you think we have had an effect in that positioning and its reputation? If you could share some of your experiences about that.
Sure, that's a huge question. I spent a lot of time thinking about that, so I'll try to give you just a crazy, and maybe you can help me focus on particular aspects that you're interested in. Thank you for asking. Despite the last 2 years being so relatively austere for Cornell, and despite the general issues that have affected all aspects of virtually all societies in the world, Cornell is still a university that has a rich variety of revenue sources, and depending on the particular field that you all are in, that varies a lot. So those of you who are grad students in the physical engineering and mathematical sciences, Cornell is near or at the top of the nation. Perennially, for example, in National Science Foundation support, a couple years ago, number one in the country. In recent years, never lower than number four in the country out of many, many dozens of universities that apply for that support. If you're in the biomedical or life sciences, including agricultural sciences, similar very, very high ability to competitively attract funding to the faculty, which, as you know, generates enormous enabling support for graduate student experiences and for the research that you have to get done in order to successfully complete the graduate student experience. In the social sciences and humanities, the national investment has been much, much more meager, and the humanities has been going backwards for some years. And so in equilibrium, you'd have to say that Cornell is hugely well situated to be a place where you can have a very, very successful graduate student experience, but that's just the beginning of a life in science, social science, or the humanities. The other part of it is, what do you do when you're done with your graduate degree? And this is a very unsettling time nationally, even for those in the sciences that have been richly supported in general in the United States. And we're facing, depending on who you listen to in Congress and or the executive branch, perhaps at best level funding for these agencies, and at worst something draconian, depending on where they are. So I think, compared to a lot of other places, because we have a large endowment and because there has been such a history of strong competitiveness, you'd have to say Cornell is situated much better than many other schools, but it's a very unsettling time, and I'm spending some of my political capital last week was a good example in Washington, making some of these comments. I'm focusing a lot nationally on the humanities right now. I always focus a lot on the sciences. since I'm somebody from a professional school and science background. I think if there's any single field that I'm the most worried about right now, it's the humanities. At least one proposal to Congress is to zero out the National Endowment for the Humanities, for example. In terms of the way forward for this university, we need to be very, very diligent about the advising system for graduate professional students, which is much, much different than the advising system, obviously, for undergraduate students, and depends so much on what your career trajectory is. And the huge competitiveness for research funding and the enormous, gargantuan competitiveness for faculty positions has made all of us in higher education, and I'm sure many of you, rethink the options on a career trajectory. And so I think that it's very important that we think through the faculty and grad student interaction, and also, of course, through Dr. Murphy's office and the other offices that are part of SAS, on how best, besides trying to raise resources to continue the general trajectory and momentum, to think about how to advise people. And that advice we can talk about for 3 hours, but just to give you the headline, it has to consist of people thinking about academic positions versus industry positions. It has to consist of thinking about what kind of degree to get. It has to consist of thinking about interactions between different portions of the campus that can work together in interdisciplinary fashion. And I'd be willing, at Dr. Murphy, in your convenience, if we could get it scheduled sometime, to sit and talk with the GPSA just about this one issue. Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very important and much more complicated than the overall financing of undergraduate education.
Kind of stemming, somebody passed a question to me, so stemming off of that and more from a graduate student perspective, it says, President Scorton, I read your editorial on today's Sun with great interest. I appreciated your focus on encouraging the Cornell community to positively deal with issues of stress and psychological well-being. You included some discussion of academic stress, things like prelim anxiety for students and lecture preparation for faculty. However, in my experience, the greatest causes of stress for graduate students, particularly after the A exam, are non-academic issues, such as office ergonomics in the physics department, work-life balance, financial management, professional development, starting a new family, dealing with housing as first-time owners, and so on. Cornell has developed wonderful resources to support faculty and staff with such issues, resources such as the Office of Human Resources and university policies dealing with various accommodations. What are the current institutional resources that are best for graduate and professional students to use to help with such issues? In your opinion, what is the best way for graduate and professional students in general, and the GPSA in particular, to help shape institutional policies and priorities to get better support with such non-academic sources of stress?
It's a very, very thoughtful question. I'm going to give Dr. Murphy a chance to comment on this. But I want to give you some general principles. My background is all graduate professional in terms of my experience, with a little tiny bit of experience in undergraduate education. The difference between the undergraduate and the graduate experience are manifold. We could spend the whole day talking about it. But the biggest difference is the committed nature of the enterprise, of the effort, once you get to be a graduate or professional student. You're in a specific area. It's easy to become cognizant only of things happening in that area. And so much for the graduate student, as opposed to the professional students, so much of the experience is tied up in the interaction between the thesis advisor or the group you're working with and the individual student. So that's the first place that a grad student has to interact is with the lab, the studio, the place that you're working with. There definitely are efforts and the resources at the disposal of all students in the university. And my impression here and elsewhere is that we communicate, it's easier to communicate across the board with undergraduates than it is to communicate these kind of things with graduate and professional students, because of the different settings. So one thing that we need to do on our side, besides making the services better, is find a way to communicate it more successfully. And I know that Dr. Murphy wants to make a statement about that. The second thing I would say is that there are some areas in terms of work-life balance that are aimed at the population of people on campus who have families already, marrying children. And I think the differences among those groups is less than the similarities among those groups. So, for example, access to daycare, dual career services, if the spouse is not a student and looking for a job. You want to comment on this?
I think I would say a couple of things. I think the main focus for raising these issues would be through the graduate school in partnership with the Dean of Students' Office. And I think it's fair to say, just to piggyback on the President's Court, I know if I were to interview a random selection of graduate students and ask them whether they thought the resources of the Dean of Students' Office were there for them, the answer would probably be, I don't know, or I'm not sure, or no. But in fact, they are there. So there are some policies that have already been passed under the leadership of the grad school, the graduate student accommodation policy. We've done some work with actually some undergraduate students, but working with the grad school as well as parents, students who are parents. But there may be an opportunity, President, for us to work with Assistant Dean Wick and also with Dean Hubble's staff, particularly in the student support area, for workshops, for work that's already underway in career services, trying to reach across many disciplines. And it may be appropriate for us to have conversations with Vice President Opperman, picking up on what President Sport just said, that if there are some workshops or openings that they are providing around the issues and they're not maxed out in their attendance, might we open those? Because I think, you know, first-time home ownership, things like that, are similar issues that young staff have, as well as graduate students. So I'd say let's start with the graduate school, have President, perhaps with Kent and Rebecca, begin to think and with your leadership.
Just one more quick comment on this. This is the kind of set of issues that I was hoping you would think about when I made my first statements about sending us areas so that we can be more effective at getting there. Also, in the student leaders meeting about an hour ago, I asked a question about what the best communication vehicle is from our offices to the graduate and professional student population. And I'd love to hear what you all think. I ask the question, as I do every year, since I'm a writer for The Sun, to grad students read The Sun. Somebody read it, I think, today. There must have been a slow day in the studio or lab. But the impression we got, I'd love sometime, and if it's not the right way to spend your time now, through the GPSA, I'd love to hear some feedback on what do you look to find information about this. Do you go to your departments? Do you go to grad school? Do you go to the GPSA? And let us deal with those realities in terms of how we can get information out to you. But that's already expanded. Separate from the very important issue that was raised by the questioner about how to get better policies developed.
Maybe picking up on one of the points that was mentioned in that question, the issue of family services. This is, of course, coming after the fact, but about a year ago, the GPSA passed a resolution talking about the childcare grants for graduate students. That was in the fall of 2009. The resolution basically asked that the administration writ large reconsider its policy on grants for graduate students for childcare. My understanding is that faculty are eligible for grants of up to, I think, $5,000, whereas graduate students, you know, on average make a little bit less money, are eligible for about $1,500. I wonder if there's been any progress on this issue, if there's anything on the table. I know Brenda's been involved in this discussion, too. Maybe this is a form for us, but I wonder if you might have
a thought. I think it's a terrific form to ask. I don't actually know the answer to that. I also don't know what the number is for undergraduate students. There are some parents in the undergraduate population. Do you know, Susan?
Brenda, do you know?
Yeah, it's the same amount. If any Cornell student with children who require daycare or some sort of care provision in order that student attend classes are eligible for the same amount, it's called the Cornell Student Child Care Grant. It's different than funding as an employee of the university. And so the source of funding is different. The source of funding for staff and faculty comes as part of their HR package, whereas the student funding comes through grants from the provost office. And so I know that we're in another bucket round. I know that I've passed it forward. I know that some advocacy on the part of the students, both at the undergraduate and graduate level, has passed the concern forward. Where we'll go from here, I can't really envision it going up to $4,000 per student child, because at this point any money that's put in the child care pot of money comes from the fellowship or some of the other support. And so we have to reach some sort of balance, the equilibrium there. But again, it's one of those issues that I think the GPSA played a great role in bringing it forward and advocating on behalf of students that may be having a different experience than a lot of the folks in this room.
I wonder if I may very quickly follow up. One discussion that came up in this recent discussion, I know it was mentioned briefly in your letter of President Gordon, was the issue of sliding scale tuition at the child care center. Is that a possibility that's being looked into? I mean, that I recognize that the money comes from different pots. This would sort of sidestep that issue. If the tuition were set based on income level rather than grants administered on the basis of student or staff, that might sidestep the issue and still assist providing access.
It has the potential of sidestepping the specific issue. It doesn't necessarily deal with the budget issue. That there's, so I think, I would just say thank you for raising it again. We're right in the middle of budget issues. The funding for the students does come from the budget that gets allocated out as opposed to the benefit pool, which is a very different pot. And so we'll just make sure that it is on the table. I think ultimately it will be a conversation that would involve, to some extent, Vice President Opperman, because she oversees the overall budget, but then also with Dean Newt as she carries forward the many issues on behalf of grad professional students.
So just to reinforce that, we'll both make sure that it's on the table and not just in a symbolic way and see where it comes. Thank you.
Mr. President, Vice President Murphy, as a student at Cal and Ag Life Sciences, Cornell's unique in having a mission that is both private and public in nature. Reading some display last week, the state apparently having as much money as I do and unable to fund Cal's in levels in previous years. Cornell's fund article suggesting the reality of having alternate funding sources for these state supported schools, and how do you see that playing out in the short and to what extent long term?
So you stated the question very elegantly, and that is in two ways. One has to do with the fact that there's portions of Cornell campus that depend more on public support. And to talk about that part first, if you look at the history elsewhere in the country of public universities and how they've dealt with periodic, sometimes very severe reductions in state support, usually not at the level that we're dealing with now, where there's still a recession functionally. It's usually been reflected either in tuition increases in the undergraduate population or some reduction in services or offerings. In private institutions in general, this hasn't been the same kind of issue, except in the rare occasion where a private institution is dealing with some research area supported by the public and the public decides to walk away from it. So those of you in high energy physics, before your time, the superconducting super collider was an example where the public decided just to walk away from an area of research. And then the way that was dealt with varied a lot around the country. If this budget, which is just a proposal right now, passes, as I think we put out in our commentary, we will have had the support for Cornell from the state overall, not specifically talking about Cal's, but overall reduced by 28% over 4 years. So something is going to have to change, and there's no sense dancing around about this. The way to deal with that size of a change usually is by a combination of changes in revenue on the one hand and changes in the kind of work and the amount of work that you do on the other hand. And I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago on the undergraduate side, and I bring that up because tuition is the largest revenue source at this university, a decision was made to have the same dollar amount increased for in-state undergraduate students as for those in the contract colleges, as for those on the ballot side. I think it's been 3 years, maybe that's been the case. But in terms of affecting the larger issues that you're indirectly referring to, like how many faculty will be there, what about facilities availability, what about the ability of student stipends, they all come from different parts of the chain, the things that are in a state of flux. So in that budget proposal, you may have noticed that the governor did not suggest any interruption of the capital flow. So renovations that are in our plan right now for Stocking Hall, Warren Hall, and others would go ahead at pace because that wasn't suggested for a decrease. On the other hand, changes in undifferentiated support to the university and would affect a large college like Cal will force the dean to think about the balance between revenues that are possible, and that's a lot of revenue to come down. So it's too early to say, not as an evasion of the answer to the question, it's too early to say what the dean will decide to do, and it'll be, in your case, I don't mean you personally, but in your case collectively, a combination of discussion between the dean of the graduate college, the dean of this particular college, and the provost of the university and me as to how to deal if this is going to be assumed to be a long-term reduction in the base budget of that part of the university that depends on state support. The other aspect of it that's a little indirect to the graduate student experience, but still very important, is that as a land grant institution running the extension, popular extension for the state in all 57 upstate counties and all 5 boroughs, we have to see how these kind of changes and others that would affect the county supportive extension will affect those services. And it's interesting that if you look at the strategic plan of the university, some of these issues were brought up, even preceding knowledge of this sort of suggested budget reduction. And so I guess the summary of this rambling answer is that it's too early to give you chapter and verse, but depending on what you're talking about, capital development, support of grad students themselves, which depends a lot on federal budgetary issues, and support of the faculty in the college and other aspects of the functioning separate from the research lab, that's more under the purview of what the university can afford to do. So it's a very, very important issue that you're raising. Of course, it affects all 4 contract colleges to different levels. But Cal is obviously a focus of a lot of attention and concern. And so we're talking about that all throughout the administration, including, most importantly, Dean Boers thinking about it, as well as Dean Kavakoff and Matt Eos and Katz. Very important question.
So we have time for about one more question or comment. Don't be shy.
This is the one in the...
Oh, right there.
Let me just repeat the question for those who couldn't hear it, to make sure I heard it correctly. The question was exactly what are we going to do to advance the prospects for the humanities nationally and specifically for Cornell, current Cornell grad students. Is that right? Okay. So I'm devoting a lot of time to trying to get people who actually know a lot about this area, humanists, I'm not a humanist, and also people who can affect the future of the humanities to talk to each other and to view the difficulties and plight of the humanities as a serious national priority. And I'm sending blogs, op-eds. I'm going to be giving a keynote at the National Humanities Alliance and Advocacy Day in March, and have spoken in general terms with many of the leaders of many of the humanities-oriented organizations around the country. And so the first thing is to educate myself and others about what might be possible. When I was visiting with members of Congress on the Hill recently, the number one issue I talked about was funding for the humanities, especially but not limited to the National Endowment for the Humanities, and that was because it's a federally funded research and cultural agency. The toughest part of your question is what to tell current graduate students. I don't believe that the National Endowment for the Humanities will disappear, but we have to make sure that that's the case. Because that's a source of stipends for faculty in the humanities and a source of research funding, a source of money for preservation, for digitization of resources, even the indirect areas of their budget are important for those who are going to do scholarly work in the humanities. I think that we need to act as if there's a real threat to make the NEH disappear, and that's how I'm acting. And the only thing to tell Cornell graduate students right now is to continue to do the good work that you're doing, to continue to work with the faculty who are hugely devoted to this area and are informing the work that I'm doing because they really know the field better than I do. And let me know, and I hope that this is some assurance, that there is a very substantial amount of activity around the country and other quarters to recognize the special threat to humanities scholarly activities. And how that will translate into palpable support and changes in policy, we'll just have to see. There's something you can be doing, though, I don't mean you personally, but collectively, and that is to make your point of view known to elected representatives. We're all voters, almost all of them are voters, and even if you don't vote, your constituents of people in Congress, and it's important to make your voice heard on this and to talk to others who can make their voices heard. Very, very important not to take it for granted that somebody else will get the word out on this.
Well, with that, I thank you for speaking. Is there an email address if there's any follow-up questions or comments or responses to the questions you posed that the bid contact both of you at?
Yes, hers is shm1. She hates when I put that out in public because... but she hates that anyway, just on principle. And mine is david.scorton@cornell.edu. She hates when I put that out there because then you write me and I forward it to her. So, anybody else's email we should put out there?
Those two will be fine. Okay. Happy to hear from you.
We are both very happy to hear from you. And I hope once again that you'll consider sending some sort of, formal but not resolution-based communication in addition, not a set of resolutions that you may vote on, just to better educate me on issues that you're concerned about. Assume that I read the stuff that you send me. Assume that I haven't forgotten about the GCI, nor has Dr. Murphy. But assume that things you do to update us are very worthwhile. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, so now for the executive update.
So I'll start off. To begin, we're launching an initiative where, we're launching an initiative where older GPSA members will be having coffee with anybody who's interested. So it's usually going to be like a 3-on-3 scenario. So it's definitely a way for like newer voting members and also newer members of the GPSA to get kind of familiar to what we do here, how the processes work, and how you can participate best and how to best use your resources. So if you're interested in this at all, you can just send me an email, and then we just basically find a time that works for different members just to be kind of like a mentoring system. And it's a good way to find people who are interested to fill the vacancies because there's always high turnover rates on the GPSA every year. So send me an email on that front. I feel like there's other things I'm supposed to be saying. There's a leadership breakfast tomorrow. I forget what the exact topic's about, but the policy office is coming to discuss with leaders of all the assemblies, and so I will provide a report that will be publicly available by Friday on that. And yes, that is my executive update.
Okay. So as for the communications committee, as you can see, we have ordered some bottle openers as well as stickers with the Cornell GPSA address, so please pass them out to people in your department. And I will have a date for the next communications committee soon, so please email me at JLS255 if you are interested and not on my committee already. And now to Tom.
All right, so I've presented to you in the past on committee staffing, and for the most part, you have responded very favorably. I will just throw out there, not all committees were staffed this year. It's in part due to some of the functionality issues of these committees on both our peer assembly, the student assembly, and in the wider university assembly. And so I thank everyone who's had interest in that. It sort of leads into what I really want to tell you about, and that is the way in which the GPSA is reimagining, and that has to do with our own governing documents, our charter, and our bylaws. These are two publicly available documents. The way they're currently written can be found on the Office of Assembly's homepage by clicking on GPSA and Documents. The thing to mention about this process is that it's been involving mostly those members of the GPSA who have an interest in changing the current structure, but in fact it affects all members of the GPSA, whether or not you have that interest. And what we're trying to do is make everyone here as aware of the proposed changes to how we'll operate as possible. So to that end, I wanted to let you know of a few upcoming dates that I hope you'll all consider being at, some of which you probably already have in your calendar, some of which you may not. So the next time the GPSA meets is actually on March the 7th, which is on the schedule listed as a voting council meeting. You may as well just cross out the voting council aspect. This is an important meeting for everybody. It's not required of those members who don't normally vote, but the thing is, it will possibly affect you. We're going to have a broad discussion about the proposed changes, and one of the big ones actually is the meeting structure, and whether or not to be meeting in the same way we've been doing so. And so this is a topic of discussion as much as business, if you ask me. So if you could attend that meeting on the 7th, we'd actually like to have you. And then the next one will be on the 14th, which is on your calendar. And the reason I bring that up, again, is because we'll be going over similar material as we will on the meeting at the 7th, but the difference is we'll be talking about them much more broadly in our breakout sessions, which we have found very useful in this process of revisioning and changing the charter. So that's the upcoming business I wanted to let you know from my perspective as Vice President of Operations. I've been corrected. It's March 7th is your next meeting. 21st of February is the one I want you to come to. So take a note. February 21st is the next business meeting. March the 7th is the one you're already hopefully attending. Thank you for that.
Okay, so now I'm going to turn the chair over to Preston because we're going to discuss old business.
Thank you. So we have two pending resolutions today to discuss, and one of them we're actually going to be voting on because in the charter it allows us to actually run one business item through a discussion meeting. And so today's resolutions we'll be discussing are a resolution that Evan alluded to previously as the cuts to the Cornell Council in the Arts. I believe he alluded to it. And so he will be presenting on that. We will not be voting on that today. That will be voted on at the next voting member meeting, which is on February 21st, which is the business meeting. But the resolution that we will be voting and discussing and voting on today is the resolution regarding graduate student mental health, resolution number 5. And that one was authored by Brian Forrester, and Chris will be speaking on his behalf today because of the fact that Brian is ill. And so that one we will be both discussing and voting on. And so with that, we're going to turn the floor over to Evan just to bring the discussion of the Cornell Council of the Arts.
Hello, I'm Evan Corson, one of the two humanities voting representatives. I think this fits well with the discussion we were just having, because I think, in my view, anyway, this resolution is about the importance of the arts and the humanities. I agree that the NEA and the NEAs are important. $100 million endowment on the federal level. However, a little smaller picture here, $100,000 level, and just on our campus. But that being said, I'd like to think it's something that we can take an active voice in. Not that writing the Congressman is important, but this is something that affects our own campus and funding of our own arts and humanities project.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you a little bit of background, the CCA, the Cornell Council for the Arts, was founded 45 years ago to fund the arts on campus. It's been in a little bit of turmoil the past few years. There was a working group that met in 2008 and noticed some problems. Basically, they were saying things like, it's not as efficient as it could be. There's a lot of administrative overhead. Not as much money is going out the door to arts projects as we might like. One of the recommendations of that committee, this is now 3 years ago, was to form another committee that would then propose a revised vision for what the CCA might look like. That committee met several times in 2010 and authored a report to the provost's office, and the provost had endorsed that report. It is, I think, positive in that there is a net budget increase by $50,000, which is bringing the CCA's annual budget from the provost's office to $225,000. However, the area of concern for me personally and for several other people is that this change would eliminate the individual grants, which is the single largest way that the CCA, as it's currently constructed now, is active in our community. They disperse somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000 annually to about 70 or so different groups and individuals. So that's roughly $1,000 per project for arts on campus. It's worth noting that this is the only central arts funding organization on campus. Perhaps even more importantly, it's the only way, I think, that if you are doing arts work in a traditionally non-arts department, say you're in electrical engineering and you're doing an artistic project of some kind, it is theoretically possible that you go to your department and apply for funding, but this is the only sort of university-wide venue for you to apply for funding. Now, I'm in the music department. If they get rid of funding and say, well, we still expect the music department to fund the music project, I mean, there's a reasonable expectation that I can go to my department and help fund the music. But I think you're in a different situation when you're in any one of, you know, other 90-some-odd fields in the graduate school. It's not traditionally arts based. Maybe one final word, and hopefully, maybe there are a couple of questions. Hopefully, you all got this resolution and have a chance to read it. Again, to pick up on President Scott's point, he said, you know, yes, do resolutions, but also engage this process. Don't have resolutions just come out of nowhere. I would like to report positively that even though this resolution hasn't been voted on yet, it will not even be voted on today, we've only discussed it a little bit, it's already having the desired effect. Dean Kent Kleinman held a meeting that was by invitation only, but nevertheless, my hope would be for an open forum at some point. But I attended that meeting. There was a lot of pressure to maintain the individual grants. Even if the funding source does change, there's discussion about that. There is recognition that there's a useful function served by a central administering grant body. So I'm pleased to report that this resolution is having a positive effect. I think that's everything I have to say formally, but if there are any questions, I think we still have a few minutes.
So if there are any questions or comments for Evan, now would be a good time. He also will take any afterwards if you want to just speak to him privately.
My email is david.sporton.
There's a question back here, actually.
Yeah, I just have a question. I took a look at the proposed CCA program ad hoc committee, and they do a breakdown of different fields and how many individual grants, and you were referring to that there wouldn't be an avenue for somebody in engineering and stuff. Do you actually know what the breakdown is of the number that in those cases, like how many people in these other fields actually apply for things?
There is the report prepared by the committee on page 3 at the top breaks it down by organization. There's 7 grants from AAP, 4 grants from human ecology, 1 grant from Cal, 20 grants in arts and sciences, 5 for the Johnson Museum, 4 for Cornell Cinema, and 10 for other, which includes student organizations. On the previous page, it also gives a breakdown by who was applying. There's most of the grants go to, and there are 52 grants total, which is an average over the past 3 years, 35 to faculty, 10 to students, 4 to staff, and 3 to student organizations. That's an important point to raise, that a lot of them, there's a lot of grants administered. I shouldn't mislead you. More of this money does go to faculty than it does go to students. Nevertheless, I mentioned this meeting that occurred about a week and a half ago now. There seems to be a sense, and this is only my informal sense, that there are a number of avenues that faculty can pursue that aren't open to students. One thing to mention is the National Endowment for the Humanities. If it still exists in a couple of years, that's a venue for faculty that they can, I don't want to say easily, but they can apply to. I, for instance, I'm an international student. I'm not eligible for funding from the American federal government, whereas I can still apply to the CTA. So anyway, come back to your point. Yes, there are fewer grants outside of the arts and sciences, but there are still some.
I think Chris had a question.
I think we're yet to meet.
Which meeting?
The closed one?
Yes.
We have time for one more question or comment, Evan?
The resolution, the first resolve was that there would be some sort of open meeting. I'm working on that front. Should there be one, you'll hear about it.
Seeing none, we'll move on into the agenda. So this item will actually be up for a vote at the February 21st business meeting. So if you're interested in hearing the further discussion and see what the resolution does, please attend that meeting. And if you have any suggestions for Evan on this topic or any other topic, please send him an email. Moving on, we'll be discussing and voting on Resolution 5, which is the graduate mental health care. And to speak on this matter, we will be having Chris speak.
Hello, everyone. Must be really sick, blessing me here. The motivation for this resolution was to deal with an issue that everyone's mind, mental health, stress, and acceptance, work, and responsibilities. And the resolution the committee came up with tries to address this in a number of ways. I can skip the resolve of GPSA resolution approved or recommended to the faculty senate. Contact all faculty advisors, instructional staff annually, remind them of the importance of articulating their expectations and processes of research, teaching, and classroom. The idea is that the classroom environment and the research environment can be both a source of stress and mental health issues, as well as an opportunity to facilitate strong mental health connections to each step of the defense. And the second clause is that defensive stress. Advisors and instructional staff should keep in mind those differences, including but not limited to situations where grad and professional students could be under undue stress, experiencing negative mental health, high amounts of work in exams, students having personal issues, and graduate students, IGTA especially, have multiple responsibilities. And that this resolution be forwarded to not only Mr. Murphy, but also the Net folks, Dean of the Grad School of Art, Dean Hubble, and others, so this conversation will continue to evolve over time. That's where we stand now. Happy to answer any questions on that about the text of the resolution. Brian was really instrumental in drafting it. I nearly hated this grammar. So any substantial comments I'll serve you with.
So at this period in time, we actually are moving into a formal debate because this is a resolution that's being considered by the voting body. And so in that realm, is there any member who wishes to speak out against the resolution? You would have time at this moment. Seeing none, we'll move more into an informal discussion. So if you have any questions, comments, or friendly amendments or amendments to add, please raise either your hand or your placard. Tom was first. So Tom.
I support the resolution, but I also know that as the GPSA is thinking about how to work with this mental health ad hoc committee in the future, I wondered if you could comment on how this resolution may be impactful or will impact our changes that we consider to this ad hoc down the road. If you would comment on that, that would be useful, at least for my thinking, how this would work in.
Those of you not familiar with the SANS, I'm doing it, they're proposed for Brian pushing hard for to have a current subcommittee on mental health, so as when that committee would not, as not how committee mental health group is appointed every year to the CSA, and Brian and others, myself included, realize this issue will never go away in the sense that always be something important to address, and that it should be a subcommittee within the community. In terms of how this resolution addresses that, it's a bit hard to say, but what I can say is that given that it does call for continuing engagement among GPSA graduate professionals and the administration, it would seem that it would be the perfect thing for a permanent subcommittee of the student advocacy to deal with as the conversation evolves further.
And then Evan had a question or comment.
I suppose I might even propose this as an amendment, but I would have to think about the exact wording of the language. I was going to ask Brian about this. I don't know if you want to speak about it. There was an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education about 2 weeks ago now. The headline is "College Freshmen Report Record Low Levels of Emotional Health." So the now granted, and this may be something to take into consideration about whether we want to include this in our resolution. It does specifically talk about undergraduates, but nevertheless, it does follow on an undergraduate resolution. But the level, basically, to summarize the article, and there's a graph. The line goes down, you move back. They did a large survey of undergraduates conducted by UCLA, and the level of emotional health is the lowest it's been since 1985 when we first started asking this question. There are other things about economic impact, that sort of thing. But if you think, I don't know, that would be open to an amendment that might look like that, I think, whereas the Chronicle of Higher Education, blah, blah, blah.
But I can imagine Brian would have a problem with that. He might say, should we stick to more graduate professional students? But my sense, perhaps you would use this way too, is that the article which you referenced, I think, would paint a more robust picture of important mental health considerations, student experience, the undergraduate, graduate, professional, or other. So I would look favorably on a friendly amendment. I don't think it changes the focus away from graduate professional students. Mm-hmm. It does.
I think that would be like a parliamentary inquiry or something. Chris?
He cannot accept friendly amendments, but you can propose an amendment to the resolution that's being considered.
And we would have to vote on it?
Yes. Yes, and then we would vote on that separately.
So what do I do?
I propose the amendment.
Yes, and so you need to have the terminology formed in it. So we'll come back to you once you have terminology written. Rebecca, you had a question? Seeing no other hands, are there any other questions or comments on this resolution for Chris or any member of the ad hoc mental health committee? Yes, Billy.
I have a question. I'm not sure if you can really answer this, but I support the resolution, but I feel like the language is a little bit general. And I wonder if there was any discussion in the ad hoc committee about something more specific, or if there was a reason why. So, like in the first resolve clause, why we state generally that faculty and staff annually remind them of the importance of articulating their expectations, et cetera. That seems we don't set any expectations by how we're going to remind them, or what specifically we're going to remind them of, or what form this contract is going to take.
Just an assembly last year passed on resolution kind of similar focus, and they have something on Soli at the State Seminary. And I actually asked Brian last week, and we were going back and forth between him and myself and the committee, as to why that may not be able to not really use that in there. And so that was one example of that, including more specific. And in response to it, there was a compromise in the committee. A lot of the discussion was to have this be more generalized, not just be on syllabus statements. Several members felt that the syllabus were attached to such information, and such a mental health clause would get very busy. It's not to say that it wasn't important, but Brian is reading himself the old whereas the statement on syllabus would be a very concrete thing to put in there. The fact is, can we carry on this conversation with mental health beyond a note on the syllabus? So that would be one response. In terms of other ideas that were not considered, I would have to refer you. Brian, if you wish, this moment, please, your answer.
Are there other any questions or comments at this time?
You know, there's one thing that comes to my mind. It's that the undergrad students have a casual resolution that bears resemblance to this one. And I wonder whether giving an effort to speak to the entire student community might want to cross-reference or come out and air these resolutions.
Our resolution is the 9-4-5 mentions resolution 40, passed on November 11th. That's not right.
That is the student assembly
so far,
resolution.
Was more specific than this one. Do you think they both address important issues? They share a lot of similarities. Our 40 is more specific with that. I'm not sure how Brian would feel about laying down a table to urge it. I don't know.
As a side historical note, since Brian's not here to speak out, we were aware of Resolution 40's existence prior to the formation of the graduate school specific one, and the reason why there is an independent one is because of the committee's work, I believe, felt that there was a unique insight for graduate students to provide towards their own mental health awareness and needs on campus. And so with that regard, he kind of tasked the committee itself to form its own independent resolution rather than mirroring the student assembly.
Just very quickly, skimming Resolution 40. I think it is different enough from ours. I think that we do make a unique contribution. I think, I grant the language is in general, but nevertheless, I think we do outline specific areas where we feel we can make some changes. Where I presume the assembly resolution, I think, calls for more general awareness. This is sort of a quick skip. Wonder if I might propose amendment.
Amendments are on the table at this time. So yes.
It's very general, but I think, especially given that Resolution 40 was back in November and it's already came up since then, my proposed amendment would insert the following language after the fifth whereas clause. Whereas the Chronicle of Higher Education published an article on January 27, 2011, entitled College Freshmen Report Record Low Levels of Emotional Health, stating that emotional health is at its lowest level. The survey began in 1985.
All right, so there is an amendment on the table as read by Evan. And at this time, there will be an understanding that Evan will forward the language to the authors and it will be incorporated into the resolution if passed. So what we're voting on, and the clerk. And what we are voting on is only the amendment, not the entire resolution. So at this time, those members who have a placard in front of them, who are a voting member of the GPSA, who are in support of the amendment, please raise your placards. Yes. Yes. Once amended, what occurs is the amended resolution is then considered as a full vote. But what can happen is that if you don't like the amendment, you get a chance to shoot it down again, and then you can bring it back. There's just a whole bunch of other parliamentary things to do. But anyway, we'll vote on the actual resolution after amendment. So those in favor, please raise your placards now. Counting, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Those opposed, please raise your placards. 1. Those abstaining, none. So with a vote of 11-1-0, the amendment is considered attached to the resolution at this time, and now we can go back to further discussion.
Just one quick procedural question. Do I have to, am I required to abstain as the...
No, you are not. And the reason why I was voting is because of quorum issues. We're at the very threshold of quorum, so the chair has to vote. Any other questions or comments for the authors or any member at this time regarding Resolution 5, the graduate mental health? The chair will also consider motions.
Motion yes. To close debate.
And move to vote. All right. Is there a second? Seconded by Bobby. All right. So now we're actually voting on the resolution as amended by Evan. Evan, could you read the amendment one more time just so people know exactly what they're voting on?
This would be after the fifth, whereas, the one that notes mental health stress. Whereas the Chronicle of Higher Education published an article on January 27, 2011, on my birthday, entitled College Freshmen Report Record Low Levels of Emotional Health, stating that emotional health is at its lowest level since the survey began in 1985.
And that my birthday is considered as an aside, and that will be included in the text.
That was not included in the language forwarded to the question.
Thank you. So that is, we're voting on the resolution with this amendment attached. So those in favor, please raise your placards at this time. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Those opposed, please raise your placards. 0. And those abstaining, please raise your placards. 0. So with a vote of 12-0-0, the resolution on graduate student mental health passes.
Dr. Something.
Yeah. And with that, I'll turn the chair over from a business meeting back to the discussion meeting, and so Jen has the chair.
Okay, so now we will have elections for our vacant at-large seat. Would anyone wish to... Okay.
Is there a call for nomination?
Yes.
I'd like to make a nomination.
Yes.
I'd like to nominate me and Judy for music.
Do you accept the nomination?
Yes.
Yes. One nomination. At this time, you can nominate anyone. You can nominate yourself. You can nominate a friend. But they have to be present.
What's the seat for?
It is seat for an at-large voting member seat of the GPSA.
Sure.
Santogua?
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Marquise for
Vince. Marquise, do you accept?
Why is it vacant?
It is vacant because Grant moved to Washington, D.C. and had to vacant both the student advocacy chair as well as her voting membership. Are there any other nominations at this time? Yes?
I'd like to nominate myself.
Will you say your first and last name?
Michael Barnett from the law school.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. So we have three nominations. Are there any other nominations? All right, so we will move to close elections. Is there, seeing none other elections, we close them. And so now we're going to give each of the nominees about a minute to talk and give you an idea of who they are and what they are going to do on the GPSA. And so we'll go in the order of nominations. Please state your first and last name when you get to you.
Hi, I'm Leanne Kinsel. I'm a music representative, and I have been a
Good evening. My name is Marcus Hawkins. I'm an equal representative as well as
Chair Student, I came to this body because I wanted to make a difference in Cornell in my short 2 years here. And over my time being active at GPSA over the last 5 months or so, I've seen that from the perspective of a non-voting member, there's not so much that you can do. But as a voting member, you can really change the direction of how this campus goes. And so that's why I want to be a voting member. As student advocacy chair, I'm going to start talking about issues of technology, diversity, as well as other issues that come up in everyday lives of graduate students in our campus. I am really excited about being involved, and I just look for your vote. Thank you.
Then Mike.
Hi, my name is Michael Barnett. Like I said, I'm with the law school. I'm a 101, so I'm brand new to Cornell University. I'd like to make, an effort to step out the outside of the law school system, which is going to be very insular, and yet at the same time, we encompass 600 students on the campus and have one representative voting on the board. Personally, I'm a member of CLSA. I'm one of the 2 1L representatives, which is the Cornell Law Student Association. It's like our CPSA, the Microcosm Law School. I'm also a representative for the Alternative Dispute Resolution Society inside the law school, and I hope to act as a liaison sort of for the law school and the university at large. It tends to be a little disjointed from the University of Bears, and I like a lot of what CPSA does. The CLSA, I mean, we don't it's very exciting and empowering that we are able to focus one-on-one with the administration of the law school. We've gotten a lot of input and the energy perspective faculty members, and on GPSA I hope to achieve the same for the 24,000 undergraduates and various thousands of graduate students at Cornell. Anyway, that's my spiel.
And at this time we have time for maybe one or two questions for all members, if there are any, for any of the nominees.
Can we say their names again when we vote?
Yes, we will restate their names again. We'll probably just give first names just so it's easier to write. Any other questions or comments? All right, seeing none, we're going to close the question and nomination process, and we're actually going to move on to voting. And so we have, and if I call your name, please just stand up so they can associate the name with the person who just spoke. So Mia, then Marquis, and Michael. So that probably be the best way to put the name down. And so what is going to happen is the clerk will be going around and handing out a piece of paper to any member who's eligible to vote. And so those who are eligible to vote is if you're here today representing a specific field. So if you know that you're a field representative, please take a piece of paper. If you have any questions, please consult either Tom, Jen, or I, and we will be able to decide if you're actually eligible to vote. Yes, you are. Going to announce the breakout session? No. It's just voting and then they give it to him. All field representatives. So if you're here representing a field, you please take. Yes, Mira, I think you do take one.
Okay, so
it's
not the voting numbers.
Yes.
Voting and reps.
What are we doing for the breakout session? Just discussing CPA and graduate mental health care? Anything during the breakout session? Yeah. So as you are considering who to vote for and actually are voting for, after the votes are collected, we're going to go into a very brief breakout session where you will break out to different superfield areas. And superfields are broken down to whether you're part of the humanities or physical sciences, biological sciences. And this gives an opportunity for any of the non-voting members to discuss issues and ideas with voting members. And I believe that the GPSA itself would be interested in understanding how the wider constituency approaches the issues that were discussed today. So anything ranging from the graduate mental health care initiative that was just passed
to the CCA resolution that is being considered at the next business meeting. Additionally, President Scorton has provided insight into an initiative in order to gather more graduate student feedback directly to the administration. So if you have any ideas or insights into issues that are plaguing the graduate student community, please just bring them up. And then also if you have any ideas of how to best communicate with high-level administrators, please bring them up. And this is also a time for just basic questions of, like, what is the GPSA? What does it do? How can I get more involved? Just contact a more senior voting member, and they'll be happy to explain these things to you. Tom.
Will a motion to extend the time of the meeting be allowed at this time?
Yes, it will. What time do you want the meeting extended?
7:15.
So there is a motion on the floor for the extension of the meeting until 7:15. Voting members, there is a second. And now we'll just do a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
One.
With one nay. All right. With that, the motion passes, so the meeting is extended to 7:15 p.m. And if you do have to leave prior to that, feel free to leave.
Okay.
So at this moment in time, we're going to break out into the super fields if you have handed it in. If not, please just give it to Amy or bring it up front. And then the super field structure breaks down into physical sciences, biological sciences, humanities, social sciences, professional schools.
Biological.
I said biological.
Engineering.
Engineering. I believe that is it.
Yeah.
And so please find the representatives that are associated with you. There are certain people who have been in attendance previously, and then we can identify them as they move.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. Humanities, come over here.
Social sciences.
Social
sciences.
Okay. So this is really like we're coming up to race review, policy review,
right.
And it's really like someone
okay.
I don't have to do that.
Dr. Tom, yeah. How quick did you turn around your mood?
They're having a telephone conference like 2 days from now, right?
Yeah, talk to Tom about it. And he'll send an email out.
Oh, cool.
I would usually offer it just my age.
Really? Good.
Yeah.
You're not here before.
Yeah, you know, all my volunteers.
I've seen them since our last little get together and discussion. The problem is, I would really like to encourage people to be more vocal about what they're actually thinking about.
Sure.
You know, we're
still
about the
GPS. Yeah, but that's often stated, though. And now we're talking about, like, issues of going to privatize. I do want to bring that up, but...
Yeah.
So I think what I'm going to do, actually, is... Since they want more of a formal response,
yeah.
I mean, use this opportunity and write...
When I bring things up, they're like, oh, well, we're in turn.
Yes.
And I'm like, did you see I was, like, by you?
Yeah. That's the thing.
That's why your voices need to come out. Because
but,
when I say something...
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
You're not in touch, even though that everything is in need, but everybody complains. But so...
Everything that they talk about, they all fall under it now.
Yeah, I'll just ask for it. So at this time, if anybody has not submitted your little yellow slip, please do so. All right, considering that, good vote. Thank you. Yeah, I think we do need to.
Would there be hypothetical reasons for
it? Oh, it's not that possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. try to say that not every morning, not every PLA is representative of something. First of all, I want to check it out.
Seeing that it's 7:05, we should reconvene, and so we can share what the different discussion groups are discussing, and then also go over who won the most previous election. So, physical sciences, biological sciences. Brenda didn't start to use it. Would you like to announce? Hey, Chris. Bring the group back. You can stay sitting there. All right, anyways, the first item is the most recent election, so we should congratulate Mia on being elected. And this was a very close election for all three members, so I encourage them to continue participation as more seats may be opening up in the future. To move on, we would just like to kind of recap what was discussed in the different breakout groups at this moment in time. So if we could have a representative who thought there was something interesting being discussed from a different group, just kind of say what group you're in and what's being discussed. So we'll start with Evan.
Humanities, we discussed some of the charter changes, talking about the role of voting and non-voting representatives. We seemed roughly divided about whether there was a desire to make all the meetings the same, 7 business and discussion meetings per semester, or leave the system as is, which is about what I would expect. We've been debating this for 13 years now. I imagine we'll keep doing it well in the future.
Chris?
I'm trying to echo that debate, a similar thing, whether to merge a meeting so we still meet twice a month and we have discussion on the commentary part, not to promote here. And I want to say we were evenly divided, we recognize pros and cons, but it's time to get a resolution to this either way. Forward to a few minutes of this long time to wait, but there was awareness that it's especially challenged, engaged, non voting members, and we're focused on the meetings that they are alternating, we're moving together.
Physical sciences, what were you guys talking about?
We discussed multiple topics, and to the end, we were discussing how to best communicate with the administration, and particularly what we were talking about.
Biological sciences?
Thank you.
and then professional schools.
We discussed some of the details I mentioned earlier in regard to charter change, the structures of the meetings and the purpose of the meetings, and the voting structure.
All right, thank you. If there was note takers at any of the discussion groups and would like to submit it for being posted on the forum, you can just submit it to the executive members and we'll type it up as a forum post and you can continue the discussions there. So as my obligatory mode of communication, we always have to say that you should always check out GPSA at CornellGPSA.com. Thank you.
Take a sticker,
yes. And I should wear one, apparently. So there's always a forum there with active discussions ranging from the Cornell Council for the Arts to the charter changes. And seeing that we have 5 minutes left, we can continue any of the discussions in a fuller body, or we could entertain a motion to adjourn. So Evan's first. We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Seconded by Bobby. So we are adjourned. Thank you for attending.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.